Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Well, a special welcome to all of you who are tuning in on one of our new signals. It's so exciting how Faith Radio is growing. We have 94.1 in Hartford, 93.1 in Waterloo, 104.7, of course, faithful listeners in Madison. And if you are listening for one of the first times, we would love to get some information in your hands. We have a free welcome packet that's filled with lots of information about Faith Radio and some encouraging content for you as well. You can just visit our website at myfaithradio.com. You can request your free welcome packet today. Well, today we're going to talk a bit about marriage. You know, in marriage, it's really easy to love when you're getting loved in return. But what's our responsibility to love if we're not getting anything in return? How can we learn to be obedient to God's call to love our spouse, even in the face of adultery or aloneness or divorce? Well, my guest for today learned that taking God at his word took careful attention and a lot of obedience. While her story highlights how God redeemed her marriage, her story is more about how she reconnected with God through that process. Let me tell you a little bit about my guest and we'll get her on the show. Shauna Shanks is a wife, a mother, and an entrepreneur. Out of her passion for health and fitness, she started a health food cafe called Small Folk. Shauna and her husband, Micah, live with their three boys on an Ohio farm. She blogs regularly at shaunashanks.com. Shauna, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's wonderful to be able to connect with you. You know, my heart just was open wide as I was reading your book and reading your story of the experience that you've been through and gone through, and probably to a bit of an extent, you're still going through it, correct?
I mean, we just released a book about it, so yeah, it's pretty out in the open. I think, you know, a big difference is that we're very public about it, and so we have an opportunity to talk about it and to help others through our story.
Well, I believe someone is listening today who really needs to hear your story and will be so encouraged by it. Why don't we start by having you tell a little bit about your story? As you approached your 10th wedding anniversary, your husband, out of the blue, according to you, asked for a divorce. So take us to that point, if you will.
Yeah, well, we have three boys, and, you know, then they were, you know, fairly small and, you know, needy. I was in the little stages. And so, my church had actually sent me to a conference, and I had left for the weekend, which was, I think, the very first time I'd ever left for the weekend since I started having kids. So, you know, I'm kind of on cloud nine. I had this conference experience, and, you know, we were, yeah, like you said, we were getting ready to celebrate our 10-year wedding anniversary. So when I came home, my husband said that he wanted to talk to me, and he was acting funny, and I just was not prepared for, you know, the conversation that he wanted to have. He proceeded to tell me that he wanted a divorce and, you know, began explaining that he wasn't happy, that he hasn't been happy for a really long time. And, you know, I was not, it really came out of the blue for me because people are like, you know, didn't you know? Like, weren't there signs, you know? But I think in the busyness of raising little kids together, you know, I kind of just thought, you know, this is a season that, you know, it's all hands on deck and we're, you know, partners in this and, you know, who's going to take this kid there and who's going to get up with this kid and that kind of a thing. So I did not know that he was, you know, that miserable in our marriage and that he was feeling like that. And so, yeah, it completely caught me off guard.
So that evening, that night, it was a long night for you. You say you just started crying out to God. Tell me how that occurred and how he answered you.
Yeah, so I guess it's important to note, you know, at the time, I wasn't, you know, super on fire for God or chasing him or even being, you know, what I would think of as a good Christian. But here I was and, you know, my world was crashing down around me. You know, as a woman and as a wife, I was devastated that my husband was telling me that because he didn't just say, I don't love you. He said, like, I've never loved you. You know, I shouldn't have entered into this marriage. You know, I've been denying myself for these last 10 years and I'm not going to do it anymore. That, you know, stabbed me in the heart. Like, I was so devastated and heartbroken by his words. But as a mother, what I found immediately was that I didn't just get the luxury of being sad for myself. You know, I was devastated for my kids. So as soon as that conversation ended, my mind started thinking about, you know, if we get a divorce, what school district are the kids going to be in? How are we going to afford this house? Oh my goodness. Like, I'm thinking, you know, how is this going to affect the children? And I'm, you know, I'm 20 steps ahead in my mind already, up worrying. And I realized, you know, half of the night was gone already. And I would have to get up with the kids the next morning and be, you know, coherent, take them to school, get them ready, you know, be there for them. And so I, in desperation, really, I cried out to God that night. And I said, God, please just give me one thing that I can focus on tonight so that I can be calm and that I can sleep. Because I, as a mom, like, I knew I couldn't just lay down and die. And so that night really marked beginning of the first time, you know, that I had really heard from the Lord clearly in a really long time. And he whispered to me, hope and endure. And, you know, when I heard him say that, I immediately thought of 1 Corinthians 13, because both of those words are in there. So, you know, a lot of your listeners, whether they're Christians or not, probably know, you know, 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, right? So that's the chapter that they read at every wedding. Mm-hmm. So love is patient, love is kind, it doesn't envy, it doesn't boast, it's not rude. So, you know, that kind of maybe sounds like an odd thing that God would take me to, but it really just gave me immense peace that night, you know, that the God of the universe, who holds the stars in place and spins the planets, like, he cared about me being sad, and he spoke to me in my moment, you know, of devastation. And that really just marked the season of me chasing after God, really.
So you made a decision that night where you were going to fight for your marriage. In fact, that's the theme of your book, A Fierce Love, One Woman's Courageous Journey to Save Her Marriage. We're going to talk more with Shauna Shanks when we come back in just a minute about how she went about not only being part of that fierce love, but giving that kind of love to others as well. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith.
Love is not proud, love does not boast. Love, after all, matters the most.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. You're listening to an interview with Shauna Shanks. She's the author of A Fierce Love, One Woman's Courageous Journey to Save Her Marriage. We just heard from Shauna about how she heard from her husband one night that he wanted a divorce, and how she began to take that next step and the hard thing she had to do after her husband said he no longer loved her. Shauna, you brought up 1 Corinthians 13, and we just heard it there in that song, that love does not boast, love is patient, love is kind, it does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking or easily angered, and it keeps no record of wrongs. So how did you start to use those words that, you're right, we hear them in weddings, and they're supposed to be times of joy, but you were in a very different place in your life. How are you using those words to help you understand what it meant to love?
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, even as I said, I was so thankful that God had, you know, spoken that to me. I kind of, like, there's a part of me that was like, God, you know, that's the one that they do at the beginning of marriages, not at the end, mm-hmm. once they've already fallen apart. Like, I appreciate me to believe it's not going to work, you know, I'm sort of arguing with him. But what I found was, I end up calling in a book it as a love filter. So, you know, in that season of my husband telling me, like, I'm divorcing you, I don't love you, you know, I felt really powerless to do anything. What should I do in that situation? But what God did was kind of handed the power back to me and said, here it is, do this. And so even though I have no control over what my husband is doing, I can control myself. So if I don't do anything else today, I can be patient today. Today, toward this man, regardless of what he's doing to me, I can be kind, and I do not have to be rude. So it's my, you know, basic human instinct to kind of be rude in a situation like that when he's, you know, taking everything from me and asking me for a divorce and everything, to want to snap back and to be rude and to defend yourself. But I had this list that kind of really kept me sane, and it kept me busy. So instead of worrying about what he was doing or, you know, what was going to happen in the future, like, I'm not thinking about all that stuff. I'm just, okay, this is my task from the Lord, is today I'm going to focus on me, on myself. Am I being kind? Am I being rude today? You know, kind of thing. And so, you know, 2 weeks after God had spoken 1 Corinthians 13 to me and I began working on this, my husband admitted that he was having an affair. And so I had already kind of been using this love filter as a discipline. So I was able to act toward him in a completely different way than if I would have just been acting on my own. Does that make sense?
Well, when I read that, I thought, oh, my goodness, you would think that it couldn't get any worse. But then it did. But how great in God's provision that he gave you that, even that little bit of time. I mean, 2 weeks of that daily reminder of how to love before you receive that next blow.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note, too, you know, because people have said, like, well, you know, your husband, like, he certainly didn't deserve you acting like that. And what a friend reminded me of is, you know, think of this as a quest of obedience unto God. It really has nothing to do with your husband. Like, if God tells you to do something, then it's our business, it's our job to go after that and be obedient no matter what. Because God never promised me initially that, you know, my marriage was going to work. I did not know that. I just knew that, you know, today he's tasked me with this verse and to do this love filter, and I want to be obedient to him. So sometimes it's important to just remember and, you know, that, you know, we have to stand before God someday. And that sounds really harsh because I know that people listening, you know, think, well, but she was the victim, you know. But still, I'm responsible for, you know, what God tells me to do. And so, and he didn't give me this impossible task, even though I realize, because people look at me like, you know, I was crazy. But I realize that it sounds like an impossible task. But if he asks you to do something, then he also empowers you to do it. And that's what I found was just this rich closeness with God in that season of, you know, yes, this situation is terrible, but, like, you know, I'm trying to be obedient to God, and his presence was so real to me in that season that I can still be healthy and strong, you know, today. Like, that season didn't defeat me.
So you talked about how that season, or kind of drawing nearer to God, it wasn't something that was part of your daily habit before this had happened, but you incorporated this time with God and this understanding of who he is and who you are because of him into your daily habit. So how did that change, start to change you? I know you couldn't do much about him, but how did that begin to change you?
I just found myself able to do things that I would have never been able to do before. You know, in the book too, I think is, I call it, you know, I just feel like I was empowered by the Holy Spirit, because I know that it is not my normal nature to, you know, my husband slamming the door in my face and, you know, he's having an affair, for goodness sake, you know, for God to be able to keep me in peace. You know, the Bible talks about, you know, the peace of God that surpasses understanding will guard your heart and mind. Like, I felt like I was in a battle, you know, those are battle terms, that he was supernaturally guarding me and protecting me, so that at the end of the day, you know, I still may not know the outcome, but I just felt empowered to, you know, continue to, like I said, be obedient to God. And, you know, sometimes we don't chase God like we should until we're in desperate situations. And that's definitely what I did. And that sounds really bad, but he doesn't begrudge us. You know, he doesn't like say, well, you didn't need me when everything was good. Like, he's just so faithful to me in that season. And it really rerouted the course of my life. So I can't even look back at that and be like, that was a terrible season, because God was so close to me in that time. And even today, like, I still want to have a passion for him and want to chase him, because he who seek him find him.
Yes, when we seek him with all of our heart. You know, did you get advice from other people, and how did that factor into your journey to remain obedient to Christ? Because people are sometimes here looking at your situation and deciding what they would do, but you probably had to remain very firm in what you knew that God was calling you to do.
Yeah, and there's actually a chapter in my book called Aaron and Her, and those are the people that God brought alongside of me in that season. I didn't really tell a lot of people in the moment what was going on. I just didn't feel like that was what I should be doing. One of the things, and because I was obsessed with 1 Corinthians 13, one of the things that it states in one of the versions is love protects. And I felt like if I would just go tell everybody, you know, my husband's cheating on me and this and that, like, before things were cleared up and we even knew what we were doing, that wouldn't be protecting him. But God did bring a couple people to surround me in that season. And they weren't saying, Shauna, you need to stay with your husband no matter what. They were saying, if God has told you to do this thing, then you need to be obedient to him regardless. And so they were kind of able to come alongside me. It was actually my husband's aunt and his sister, actually. So it was his side of the family. They came alongside me in that season. And when things got too heavy, you know, like I had mentioned, we had little kids at the time. And so sometimes they would come over just at the end of the day if I was just emotionally spent. And they would put the kids to bed for me, you know, and say prayers with them so that I could kind of be relieved to just focus, you know, on myself. And it really changed my outlook on how I should be living my life as a Christian, you know, helping other people go through things. Because I'd really never had that experience before leaning on other Christians. So I felt like I needed to dedicate an entire chapter to that. And I've actually had a lot of feedback from people saying, you know, that was just such a beautiful display of God using people to help you, you know, in situations. And it makes me more aware of, am I doing that even today for other people?
Oh, that's such great advice for all of us who tend to be a little self-sufficient. You know, we walk through suffering with our friends, and sometimes maybe they just need us to hold up their arms like Moses did for Aaron and Hur to help him up. And we don't even know that as we're going through it. But if someone comes along and just begins to hold us up, to carry some of that burden, to be their strength, then we do start to learn a different way of living and loving other people, don't we?
Yeah, for sure.
So as you're going through, now you're 4 years past this, are you finding that other people are, that you're more maybe understanding of what other people are going through? Maybe you see something that other people don't see and can step in a way that other people might not?
Yeah, and what I like to champion people is, you know, it's funny because I wrote a book, and because it was our marriage failure, it is a marriage book. But I like to say that I'm not here to champion marriages. You know, like, you must stay married no matter what. Like, what I love to champion, what I love to encourage women is be obedient to God. You know, and because God showed up for me so real in that season, like, it's really changed my mind on things. You know, we don't just have to hear God by listening to, okay, what does my pastor say? Or, you know, what does this person on the podcast say, which is funny because we're on the radio right now. But we have an obligation to stand before God and hear what he says about our story. And if he tells you to do something, whether it's marriage or whether it's pursuing something else or dropping stuff, you know, since I've released the book, there's been things that I wanted to chase after that God said, that's not for you. Don't chase after that, you know. And so just being obedient, just living our lives for God. And so I like to encourage women in that because he's always faithful, you know.
Well, and to be in communion with him so that you can actually hear him. It sounds like you went through quite a journey to get to that point where you were listening to what he had to say and then being obedient to that. Now, your husband, of course, was watching all of this happen. He didn't move out. He stayed. And what was his reaction as you were going through this transformation?
Well, I like to tell people this in general, like not just marriages, but anything, like it gets worse before it gets better, you know? So if you're in the worst, just hang on, like it has to get better, you know? But at the beginning, you know, he was in an active affair. So he, in his mind, had already checked out. And he thought that when he told me that he was having an affair, that that would be it for me. That, you know, he could just easily go on with his life, that I would agree to the affair. So it would basically be a guilt-free exchange because, well, our marriage failure was mutual. It was both of us. It wasn't just me. But when I told him, no, like, you are my husband, you know, we made promises together, and I'm keeping my side, even if you don't keep your side, that really threw a wrench in his plans. So he was very angry with me at first. And I do detail this in the book, how he was disgusted by me, honestly, in that season. And so I think he stayed in the house because a couple weeks before this, his truck had broke down, and it was literally like he did not have transportation to leave, you know, and so we had to figure out like a logistically what we were going to do. And so eventually, you know, as the weeks progressed, he was kind of just watching me from the side of his eye, like, and he says this now to people, he just thought I was in denial, you know, like, what, when she snaps out of it, this is going to be ugly, you know. And so every single day that, you know, he began noticing, like, okay, if she is not in denial, then this has to be the working of the Holy Spirit in my wife, because that is not my wife. So as much as I knew that God was empowering me, he began to notice you know, that I was being empowered by God. And you know, I may not change his mind, but God has a way of getting through to his people, you know? And so I think it wasn't even just this attraction to me initially. It was, okay, if God is in our home, I better listen. It was kind of like a scary feeling, you know, if God is empowering her to do this, then I better take notice.
You know, it's just amazing, Shauna, that while your husband was actively engaged in tearing you down, that God was actively engaged in building you up to the point where you could still have conversations and still maintain a relationship of some sort during that time.
Yeah, because I feel like, you know, regardless, because we're still married, like our marriage is restored, but even now, like we have a great marriage now, but my husband doesn't fulfill me, you know, he's not my happiness. He's not my final hope. If something would happen again and, you know, our marriage wouldn't work out, like I know who I am in Christ, you know? And so I went from this needy kind of, you know, not really living my life for anything other than just being torn into a million directions with the kids, to when God takes place of your heart, like he reveals your purpose. And our main purpose as humans, I believe, is to be near our creator. That's what we were created for. And so I began to have this confidence of kind of like, I would like for you to stay in this family, like this is your family, but if you don't, like I'm fine, you know? And so, I still feel like that, because I know that no matter how great of a relationship we have, God fulfills my heart, not a person.
So the book highlights a lot of really great and positive times, but Shauna, it also highlights that there were some very low times as well, where you were maybe questioning whether or not this was the right thing that you were supposed to do, or maybe giving up on some of that positivity. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think that it's just important. You know, I think as women, at least for me, like I want to accomplish 100 tasks. Like, you know, my bio says that I'm an entrepreneur. You know, I had started this business and, you know, I want to be moving. And I just felt like in this season, God had not said, restore your marriage, you know, further your business, make a lot of money, put your kids in all of these things. Like, and really just took my focus on today, you and I are going to be together. You are going to seek me today, you know, and it kind of like realigned my priorities of if I'm doing that, then I'm okay. It doesn't matter if, you know, my marriage falls apart or not, if I'm obedient to God at the end of the day. And so it really, it took the pressure off, you know, because it wasn't about, I've got to save my marriage. It was just, today I'm going to decide. And I'm going to, some days, he would give me a scripture about being calm, be at peace today. And so my whole job for that day was, today I'm going to be calm.
Such a good word. I'm talking to Shauna Shanks today about her book, A Fierce Love, One Woman's Courageous Journey to Save Her Marriage. We'll hear more from Shauna when we come back in just a minute on Connecting Faith. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Very pleased today to be talking to Shauna Shanks, who's written her memoir, a book called Fierce Love, One Woman's Courageous Journey to Save Her Marriage. And boy, it just sounds like God is so in the business of not only redeeming relationships, but really in the business of redeeming people, Shauna. In fact, you write that before this happened, you really weren't that close or felt like you had a strong connection to God, but then you wrote, in the midst of such heartbreak and uncertainty, a beautiful thing happened. I changed. That it's possible to stand that close to God and not change. It's impossible to stand that close to God and not change. So you were transformed in this process. Talk more about that and how that has changed your life since that time.
Yeah, I mean, when you're living for yourself, right, or you're not putting God first, it's just like this. I don't know. It's like we're not fully living. And so, you know, I've been on this book tour and I've been talking about marriages and I've been talking about restoration. But the really thing that just makes me passionate is just talk about, you know, the scriptures in the Bible that talk about being lukewarm. You know, it's not just that it's, you know, something that God is not pleased with if we're not lukewarm. It's that we're not fully awake and not fully alive unless we are chasing after the heart of the one who created after us. And so, yeah, my husband and I know it sounds silly that we joke about the affair, but we always say, like, this is honestly the best thing that happened to us, because had we not been jolted awake, you know, we would have never reconnected with God in this way. Because as you say, I love how you said that, you know, he is in the restoring business. I like to listen to Chris Ballatin, the podcast, the Bethel podcast. And one thing that he always says is, all things work together for good in the end. If it's not good, it's not the end. That God has good plans for us. And he doesn't just call us into, you know, this pit to walk through, just to walk through a pit and just to make us miserable. Like, he always has a purpose for it. He's always constantly refining. And I think his end game is always to bring us to him. Because when we sit at his feet and when we give him a place in our heart, he transforms and he truly makes beautiful things out of ashes. And that's why, you know, I can go on this tour and talk about my husband's affair and kind of, you know, laugh and joke about it. And because my heart is full of the one who created me. And, you know, he's just really turned my whole family around, honestly. My kids, now they are 6, 8, and 13. And, you know, as before in the trenches of mommyhood, as I say, you know, by bedtime, like, my nerves would be shot, you know, I'm just like, get away from me and go to bed, don't get out of bed and that kind of thing. And now, you know, we just, our priorities are different. And so I allow like a whole solid hour at bedtime, to pray. You know, my husband and I, like, we lay our hands on the kids and pray for them. And, you know, we teach them Bible stories and we just kind of make it this sacred time, because I understand now that no matter what they chase in their life, they're never going to be fulfilled, unless God fulfills their hearts. And so that's the most important thing for us. So as crazy as it does sound, I am thankful that it all happened, just because it brought us back to God and it's really rerouted the direction for our life.
Well, I love what you said, that if it's not good, it's not the end. You know, yeah. I think a lot of people may be listening today and maybe they're in that stage where something is not good with their marriage. God redeemed your marriage. He called you to be obedient to your husband in love. But we know that sometimes there's some valid and honorable reasons for a wife to say enough, especially when it comes to infidelity and trust. So while we celebrate the restoration of your marriage and especially the restoration of just you, it's not always the case. And yet God can use those situations too, can't he?
Yeah, and I want your listeners to hear me, you know, because whatever you are going through, God has purposes to use it for your good. It is for your good, regardless, you know. And I definitely talk about in my book, you know, I had walked through a similar situation with my friend and her marriage ended in divorce. But God never just abandons us. He never just lets us go through bad things. If we draw close to him, he always has good things in store. He's a good father, you know. I know that that's really overstated and overused, but he truly is. He's not taunting us and be like, can you be obedient today, you know. He always has our best interest in mind, and his purposes are not to destroy you, they're to make you better. And I've been reading Corrie Ten Boom books, and one of the things that her and her sister Betsy, they had said was, you know, our father owns the cattle on 1,000 hills, and if we need something, we'll just ask him to sell a cow and help us, you know. And that was, they were talking about finances, but I believe that's with anything, whether it's a problem with your marriage, whether it's a problem with one of your children. Like, we don't have a beggar as a father. He owns everything, and he wants to, you know, that's at our disposal. We have access to that as children of God. And so don't wallow. You know, I know that, you know, there are seasons where we can be sad and that's okay, but don't wallow, because it's silly to wallow when we have access to a living God. So chase after him. Regardless of the outcome, he is for you and he has good things in store.
Such a good word. And that people are available. He has access not only to good things for us, but access to good people for us as well. You write about that. You've testified about that as well. And you've been that for other people, that he can rise up in someone else for them to come and minister to those who are hurting as well.
Yeah, and that was a huge part of my book, which I do talk about that in the book, but we were never meant to do life alone. You know, if you look at the early church, how, you know, the way that it was, how Jesus created it, you know, the disciples, like, they did life, they had things in common, they did life together. And so I know that sometimes, especially when you're in deep hurt like that, we don't want to let people in. You know, that was humiliating for me to admit that my husband is repulsed by me. Mm-hmm. Like, how awful of a wife was I? But to just be able to be like, you know what, I'm desperate, I'm hurting. And these women, I just expected them to let me cry on their shoulder for a few days and then it would pass and they would get over it. But they didn't. They stood by me. We actually still have tea a couple times a month now because we've been through that together. There's just such reward in doing life together. So that's, I'm glad that you brought that up because we were never meant to do it alone.
Well, and Satan loves for us to be isolated and to think that we're alone, and God is so the opposite.
Yeah, yeah, and you can always reach out, even if you don't have people in your own church, you know, you can reach out to me on my website. I know that you have things on your in your program, but it's humbling to reach out, especially if you have to reach out to a stranger, but it's biblical.
Mm-hmm. I remember when our media ministry began something called Prayer Works, where people would submit prayer requests, and I thought, oh, I wonder if that will work. And it is so incredibly rewarding to watch the prayers that come in, but even more so the answers, or people just saying, I'm praying for you. And to know that God has so many people out there who are willing to step in and fill that gap. And that's just His love, but it's coming through another person.
Yeah, one of the things that I do write in the book, I was talking about Micah, my husband, and I was kind of thinking, like, to God, like, God, why are you using me? This is hard. What you've asked me to do is hard. Like, if you wanted to reach him, you could spell out his name in the Northern Lights and get his attention. And I really felt like God so simply said, because I want to use you. He wants to use people. He wants to use us to reach other people. That was his original plan all along. And so it is so honoring when we get to stand in the trenches with people and kind of fight their battles with them. It's humbling. It's an honor, and it's so rewarding.
Mm. You know, talk about your kids, and they were probably a lot littler at the time when you were going through this, but they must have seen the full gamut of the greatest amount of heartbreak to the greatest amount of restoration. How did they react to you and Micah going through this?
Well, only one of my kids really knew what was going on at the time. The other two were really too small. They were still home, like just little. My older son, Josiah, was 8 at the time. And so I have a whole chapter in the book called Suffer the Children, and I talk about how I dealt with that. But the bottom line was, you know, Micah was going to leave the house one day, and I said, you're not just going to leave. Like, you have to tell him. I'm not going to tell him after the fact that their dad's left. He sat him down and had this, you know, your mother and I discussion with him. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, like an out-of-body experience for me because my kids didn't know that a parent could leave. Like, that had never, they were still so young that, you know, if you don't know that, then you never know that. And so I remember the whole night ended and he was at the door blocking my husband from leaving and he was crying and he was like, I just don't understand why. And it was the worst night to date of my life. And after my husband left for a little bit, he ended up coming back. He did leave that night. And I was trying to offer my son excuses. And finally, I just was like, you know what? I said, you know how we learn about in church that the enemy is real and that God is real. If we're going to believe that God is real, we have to believe also that the enemy is real. And I said, you know, I believe that he's tricking your dad. And he said, well, how do you know that he's trying to trick your dad? And I said, because he's making him think that he doesn't like me and I'm awesome. You know, I think, like, even in that moment, I feel like the Holy Spirit had prompted me to speak to my son on his level, because I don't know how I would have done that, you know, in that frame of mind. And so I ended up telling him, you know, what do we learn that we can do when the enemy is attacking? And he's like, I don't know, pray. And I was like, yep, so we're going to pray. I'm going to pray. We're going to ask our friends to pray. We're all going to pray for your dad. And God's going to take care of this. And, you know, even saying that, that didn't mean, you know, that I could promise him a 5-year plan or anything. But you know, as much as I want to shield my kids from all the bad things that could happen in their lives, I also want them to see us struggle, because then they'll know how to handle it when they struggle, because they're going to struggle, you know. And I want them to know that you don't have to completely fall apart when bad things happen, that we have a capable God that we can go to and that he is competent, that he's relevant, that he's alive today, and that we don't have to go through it alone. And so it was sort of a crash course in and that kind of thing also.
I'm sure he'll remember that for years to come, and maybe as he grows and matures and starts dating on his own or getting married, that he'll be able to come to both you and your husband if there's any kind of struggle that he's having as well, knowing how you persevered.
Yeah, I just think that it's important that, you know, our kids are equipped, because I think it's just, as mothers, we want to just protect them from everything. If there's a problem, I'll fix it, you know. But that's not realistic. And so realistically, I think it's okay to let them see a struggle and struggle well and struggle biblically, you know.
So as we only have time for probably one more question. I'm just curious, as we're going through and listening to the news and or even our own friend groups and knowing that there are wives all around the country who are struggling, finding out that maybe their husbands are in the midst of asking for a divorce, perhaps they're engaging in activities that are not becoming of a Christian man. How can we pray for those wives who are just struggling to find why is this happening and how can I get through it?
Well, first of all, I think if you're just talking about how to pray for them, I think we've already discussed how important it is to walk through life together. I literally prayed those women who came by me. I prayed them into my life, I feel like, because we weren't actually close before all of that happened. Like, I believe that God sent them to me. And so that he sends the right people, you know, to the right people. Mm-hmm. And just for endurance, because it's one thing to know what to do. I mean, my goodness, 1 Corinthians 13 is stamped everywhere. Like, if you walk into a Hobby Lobby, like, it's on fluffy pillows, it's on distressed wooden signs, like, it's everywhere. But to know something and to do something is completely different. And so, not that that's God's word for everyone, but I'm just saying, pray for endurance that we can be obedient even when it gets hard. Because that scripture really doesn't teach us that, you know?
Oh, hope and endurance. I love that that was just an overriding theme of your book. It got you to continue to trust him. And I know that that will be a blessing in someone else's life who's listening today. Shauna, thanks so much for sharing your story, for having the courage to share the story of both you and Micah, and for teaching us all to have a fierce love.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Blessings on your day, and we'll be right back on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Up next, we'll hear a portion of my conversation with Joe Saxon from the Fuel Leadership Conference, which was held just this last November here at University of Northwestern St. Paul. Joe offers some great encouragement on the topic of identity. So you have a new book on identity,
Yeah. And
you've also mentioned in talks and writing that women don't often rise above what we believe about ourselves. So how does our own belief about ourselves keep us from stepping into what God has for us?
I think it's like a collision of what I guess is commonly known as imposter syndrome and everything else. And I often ask the question, who are you before anybody told you who you were supposed to be? And I think it's true of men as well, in a different way. But I think life happens, you know? So your experiences, your relationships, the cultural milieu of the day, all of those things begin to impact us. And if we feel inadequate, and if we go around thinking our ideas are inadequate, if we think that long enough, we'll behave that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just common. That's just a common function. If you believe you're inadequate, then you often say, I don't know, when you do know. And it's become a habitual thing. And it impacts us as leaders. It impacts us as parents, as friends. We second guess our ideas, second guess our dreams, second guess our opinions, assume that we couldn't find out. I think some of the studies have shown when people are applying for jobs or promotions that a woman often feels if she doesn't feel able to do everything on the job description, she won't apply. Hmm. Whereas guys tend to feel more confident if they are about 60%. And so I think I've seen again and again, and had many a conversation and experienced myself, that feeling of if I'm not sure about who I am, then it's just better to sit down and not do anything just in case.
Just take a seat.
Yeah.
Well, we are designed to know God well, to know his voice, to know his heart, to represent him. Mm. Of course, these are all powerful truths, but sometimes we have an incorrect view.
Yes.
We don't have his view. And so what keeps us specifically from just stepping into that calling? Why do we listen to all of those other voices and those other views of who we are?
I think there's so many of them. I think there is. I often imagine it like tuning into a radio frequency. There's just a lot of interference. And although we may not audibly hear the voices, if your life experience has defined you, if you've been defined by a negative relationship within your family or encounters at school, those speak louder than the songs you may sing on a Sunday and the verses you read, even though those are true and the other ones are false. You've been imprinted by them in some way. And I think we kind of get frustrated with ourselves because we want to just get it. Mm. And what I found is we need to address these things. We need to address and acknowledge where they've damaged us so that we can begin to do the work to get whole and allow the reality of who God is to define our experience rather than the other way around,
right.
Which is very common for us. And I think sometimes as Christians, we know the truth on one level and on a cerebral way. So it's like, well, I'm in Christ. I shouldn't feel this way anymore. Or I know God loves me, or God has said he loves me, and I choose to believe it. And those are wonderful things to do, but at some point you have to be honest. At some point you have to say, those things are true, but I can't. This thing is the reason why when I wake up in the morning, I feel a particular way. This thing is the reason why I want to hide away from people. This thing is the reason why when I stand in the mirror, I despise everything I see. Mm. And rather than dismissing the reality of those things, it's time to face them.
Well, and that's what you mean by kind of doing that work.
Yeah.
That is really hard to do because many of us would just want to take on additional tasks and be even busier and just busy our way through this pain that we might be feeling. But what would be your suggestion if someone said, all right, I'm actually going to do some work here?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd hug them and say, well done, because I think it's a thing that we'd want to avoid. We naturally want to avoid. And I'd probably get them to count the cost at the beginning and say, you know, it's great that you've come to this point and you'll probably feel like not doing this maybe 3 seconds from now. I think we need to measure our expectations on how challenging it can be. And then I would get them to observe when in their journey, when in their life, they began to be defined by other messages.
Mm.
And say, were there circumstances, were there relationships, what cultural context did you live in? What did you hear said about women and how did that impact you? What did you hear said about your family? Were there particular moments? And to observe those for a while. And people tend to know.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to know the things that have messed us up a fair bit.
Sure.
Sadly, they're kind of obvious.
I channel them back a little bit, but they do draw forward.
They have a way of just like
they
waving.
Leak out.
Yeah, they leak out in different ways. And so I'd encourage them to think about that. And depending on what it was, there have been certain circumstances where I've said with somebody, well, what does it look like to pray through that or get counsel on that? For others, it's actually, this is a hugely life-defining experience. You actually do need a professional counsellor to guide you through the imprint this has left on you. Mm-hmm. You have survived, and it's amazing. And you want to affirm that you know, even though we find ourselves stuck in these places, the fact that we're still here actually is a wonderful thing. But there's a difference between survival and wholeness. And so I would ask them, what would it look like for them to go towards a journey of wholeness? And what things do you need to address and confront? And who have you got in your supportive network around you? Because as you begin to uncover these things, it can be very challenging.
Sure.
Very challenging to look at those things. I would ask them if they were people of faith, particularly if they were people of faith, probably I'd say it to everybody, but I'd say, you know, that God has a vision for who you are, a dream of who you are, and you want to be digesting some of that. you know, in the middle of that process, are there particular verses, are there particular scriptures that you need to be digesting, like a prescription, on your life, and who's the prayer support in this time? And you know, the other thing I'd ask is, what are your habits? You know, like your vices. Is it the Netflix binge? Will you eat more than you should? Will you drink something that really isn't ideal for you? What are you likely to do? Or will your credit card suddenly match? Because when it feels so raw again, we're likely to grab hold of those things,
right?
Because we've been used to numbing the pain.
Right.
And, or like you say, busying yourself.
Sure.
I think busyness is a wonderful one. If you just go real fast, it's all a blur.
All of a sudden, years have gone by and I still have the same problem. I've just gotten a lot done in the midst of it.
Yeah, at least I got things done. Yes. At least I bought a house or something.
Well, women don't often step into our purpose, I found, because we're waiting for this permission.
Yeah.
Someone has to give us permission. And sometimes I think, well, if I were a different gender, then maybe I wouldn't wait for permission, or maybe I would. But it seems like God's already given us permission, hasn't he?
Yeah, I would say that the Great Commission was a good sign.
Yeah.
For us all. But I also think in Genesis as well, where he addresses both, both Adam and Eve and invites and commissions them to rule and reign. I think we see it, that permission, in the lives of the women in the Bible we see. We also see that there aren't many people around them showing them what to do.
Sure.
And I think, I take it on one level, I actually take it as an encouragement when I look at the women, particularly of Jesus' day, and knowing the cultural context they were in and what it meant to be a woman in that world, that they were faithfully traveling with Jesus in Joanna, Susanna, and Mary's case, that Mary sat at the feet of Jesus like a disciple in her case, to think, oh my gosh, these were culture shapers because it was so radically different.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that to, again, help us in our expectations to say that Jesus has commissioned us, he's given us permission, and it's okay, even when you don't see it around you. It's hard and it can be lonely,
mm-hmm.
but we're not the first to encounter that.
Sure, and we won't be the last.
No.
I know the more people I get to know who are in ministry or living out their calling, the more I hear people say there was a point in their life where they kind of lost their voice.
Yes.
Did you ever go through a period like that, and how did you work your way through it?
Yes, very much so. I mean, I think for me, I probably lost my voice a long time before I lost my voice as a kid, I would say.
Mm.
And it revolved around, I mean, it was my literal voice for a while when I was singing in the choir and I was mocked mercilessly by some girls who were in a grade above me, and for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was, for me, singing was the one thing that I thought, this is wonderful, and I enjoyed and loved, and I was good. I was good at what I did, which was precisely why they mocked me.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize that's what was going on until I was way older. I just had no idea quite what the dynamic was. I just took it on. I just took it on and thought, yes, that they are right. And they're right about everything. Do you know what I mean? They didn't stop at the voice. But I think I realized for me over the years that I had to work at who I was going to listen to. Because I found that mentors and teachers would encourage me, but I would still hear the voices of, what do you think you're doing? And who do you think you are? And you sound terrible. And you sound, I think it was, you sound like an opera singer, which actually to some would be a compliment.
Sure.
But for me, I was like, oh, that's terrible because I'm nine. But I think there have been other times when I've lost my voice where people have said, well, if you want to lead, you need to be like this and you're not this enough or you're too much of this. And I think what has helped me over the years I think the encouragement of people who would say, yeah, those things are good, though. when I stopped fighting with the way I've been wired, when I stopped apologizing for who I was and how God had created me, when I chose to make some... I mean, I always want to be accountable. I always want to be accountable and in community and all of that. But I also had to acknowledge there were times, not every time, but there were times when somebody else's problem was actually their problem.
Mm.
It wasn't my problem at all. And I thought, I can't even fix this. So why am I even trying? But the encouragement of others has been a massive role, because then it gave me enough space to discover things. And then it made me think of, I always come back to, who is it? It's a parable of the talents. And when the master gives, like, the guy, do 5, 2, and 1 talent, and there's one who's like, oh, I thought you were a harsh master, so I buried it. And I think that times when I've had a distorted picture of God, I've always thought, well, I'm not good enough for you, so I'm just going to sit on this and I'm just going to wait, which was my way of saying, I'm checking out.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I call it waiting on God. What I mean is, I'm hiding. I'm checking out and I'm sticking my fingers in my ears and hoping you leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when I've looked at that passage again and again, it's encouraged me to invest what's been given, you know, and to use what he's put in my hand.
Well, grateful to have Jo Saxon on. We'll be having another conversation with her coming up in January. Thanks so much for listening to Connecting Faith today. Have a great afternoon, and we'll talk again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.